Sejam bem-vindos ao podcast Biosfera. Segundo um recente relatório ibérico, aproximadamente 6% dos solos portugueses estão degradados. Para mitigar este problema, a solução passa pela investigação científica. A Universidade de Aveiro está a estudar os efeitos do biochar, ou seja, da biomassa carbonizada, no solo. Este produto é mais eficaz e duradouro do que os compostos orgânicos convencionais. No entanto, o excesso de biochar anula funções vitais do solo. O convidado desta semana é Frank Verheyen, do Departamento de Ambiente e de Ordenamento e do Centro de Estudos de Ambiente e do Mar da Universidade de Aveiro. O investigador participa na equipa que estuda a taxa máxima de aplicação sustentável de biochar. The first question is simple and direct. What is biochar?
Biochar is pyrolyzed biomass. So you put biomass at high temperatures in a chamber without oxygen. So you get combustion without flames, and the biomass is converted into char.
The biomass can be made from different materials?
The biomass can be from any biomass, basically. The problems come when people want to pyrolyze things like car tires, things like that. So car tires is not biomass. That's why we use in the definition the term biomass. Functionally, biochar is really split into structure feedstock and nutrient feedstock. So structure feedstock biochars are made from things like wood chips, from straw, from the seeds of olives, waste or byproducts like that. Whereas the nutrient feedstock biochars are made from things like manures, from sheep, cow, or pigs, or chickens, or from sewage sludge, things like that.
Agriculture and forest byproducts?
Waste products or byproducts from forestry and agriculture, and even from urban areas.
How does biomass pyrolysis work?
Yeah, there's two main ways that biochar is pyrolyzed. It can be done in a batch unit, which is basically a big chamber where the biomass is put in, and then the doors are closed, the temperature is raised, oxygen goes out, and the biomass is converted into biochar like that. Or via a continuous feed system where the biomass is continuously moved through the chamber where it is heated. And the benefit of that is both logistically, that it is continuously producing, but also that every biomass particle experiences the same temperature and pressure conditions during the pyrolysis, which leads to much more consistent properties of the resulting biochar.
How do you know how much biochar the soil needs?
You need to have good information about the soil and the biochar. So on the one hand, we need to make sure that the biochar doesn't carry any pollutants. So for that, the biochar industry has developed biochar certification. So the biochars are analyzed that they don't have PAHs in them, the mineral content is below a certain percentage, and things like that. So it's a safe material. Of course, in addition, what we need is we need to know what the biochar will do in a specific soil. So for that, we need effect-based indicators. We need to test effect-based indicators for different soils with different biochars at different concentrations. That's some of the work we've developed here in the team. We call it sustainability screening. So this is something that we do in the lab, so it doesn't take a huge amount of time, where we take target soils and target biochars. We add biochar at increasing concentrations to the soil. We add water to that. We let the soil incubate for a while for all the materials to get to know each other, so to speak. And then we test the control soil and the increasing biochar concentration soil for a range of physical, chemical, and biological sustainability indicators. So they can be things like the water holding capacity or the pH of the soil and germination of specific plant species or earthworm avoidance, for example, where we add earthworms to the soil to see if they prefer the soil with biochar or if they go away from the soil with biochar. And that sustainability screening, it also all depends what you want to achieve by adding biochar to the soil, right? For example, if your goal is to achieve the sponge function of the soil, the water retention and the infiltration, so then you want to see how much biochar you can add. The sponge function will increase as more biochar you add. But at some point, other soil functions will start to deteriorate. which is something that you don't want. So then the point where other functions start to get negative effects is what we call maximum sustainable biochar application rate. So that's what we do here in the lab. And the combination of the soil with the biochar, you can have very different results. In one of our projects, we're working with three sites in Portugal along a climatic gradient, because the project we're looking at combating desertification by increasing the sponge function of the soil. So we have a site near Covilhã, near Montemor o Novo, and near Évora. It's getting drier as you go down. So we have here the Covilhã soil is a sandy loam with a relatively low pH. The Montemor o Novo soil is also a sandy loam, but has less organic matter than the Covilhã soil. And here is the Évora soil that has a lot more clay in the soil. So the biochar amounts that you see here are the results of us doing this sustainability screening to identify what the maximum sustainable biochar application is. For the Covilhã soil, it's about for the structure feedstock. So this is a biochar made from pine wood chips. So for the Covilhã soil, we can sustainably add 4% of biochar by weight. For the Montemor o Novo soil, we can add 3%. Whereas for the Évora soil, we can only add 2% before we start seeing negative effects. Then if we repeat that process, but then with the nutrient-based biochar, so the one made from sheep manure from the farm, we get a very different picture of what is sustainable. So then the Covilhã soil, we can only add 1% of sheep manure biochar. In the Montemor o Novo soil, the same. But here in the Évora soil, we can add 3 grams of biochar sustainably.
What are the differences between types of biochar?
This is a result of the combination of the soil properties and the biochar properties. So for example, the Évora soil has a higher clay content and the organic matter, which means that it has a higher buffering capacity. So when you start adding more and more biochar, that biochar has a very high pH, pH 9 or 10, the soil biochar mixture has a slower increase in pH than in these coarser textured soils with more sand and less clay, where the pH shoots up more quickly. And then the nutrient, the sheep manure biochar, has more salts in it, has a higher pH than the structure feedstock biochar.
If someone adds too much biochar, it is possible to remove or correct the effect of the biochar on the soil or not?
This is a big challenge with biochar, and it's a big difference between traditional soil organic matter amendments like farmyard manure or straw or even sewage sludge and things like that, and biochar. Because if you add a farmyard manure to the soil at too high a rate, if you're not so careful, you put too much, and for example, the soil pH goes above the optimum and your plants germinate less and grow less, then within 1 or 2 years, the pH will by itself start to come down and it's not a big problem. It's forgiving. With biochar, it's not like that. Because biochar, one of the benefits that biochar can contribute to climate change mitigation is by sequestering carbon in the soil. So biochar stays in the soil for hundreds or thousands of years, depending on the soil and the biochar and the climate. Whereas traditional organic matter amendments, they have a residence time in the soil more in the range of several years to maybe a dozen years. So if you overshoot with biochar, if you apply more and you get negative effects, it's kind of a problem. You have to be really careful. I mean, theoretically, you could, for example, the next year plow a bit deeper so that you dilute the biochar in a deeper soil. But of course, that costs money to do that. And the deeper you plow, the more diesel you use in doing it. So to rectify is a challenge.
Portuguese soils are increasingly worn out. Can biochar help change the situation?
Because of this much longer residence time of biochar in soil, biochar can be used environmentally both for climate change mitigation, so by taking CO2 out of the atmosphere and putting it in the soil, as well as climate change adaptation, for example, by increasing the sponge function of the soil and combating desertification. And in addition, compared to traditional organic matter, soil organic matter management, the range of how much carbon you can put in the soil with traditional organic matter management, you can really increase that range with biochar as well. But of course, biochar is not the panacea to mitigate climate change, but it can. There's been several analyses at the global scale that biochar can be one of many new technologies and new management options and land use options that we can use in conjunction to try and avoid runaway climate change as climate change is really an existential problem for us.
Biochar can be also used in forest soils?
Biochar can probably in different ways be used in most land uses that we have. Biochar is also used in horticulture, for example, where it replaces peat as a substrate, as a peatless substrate. And our peatlands that we also have in Portugal, they are very biodiverse hotspots that we want to preserve. So biochar can have a positive effect there, and that's been used quite a lot as well. In forests, because the soil in forests is not worked as regularly as soil in arable systems, even in pasture systems, the opportunity to mix biochar into the soil in forests is quite a lot lower than, and the cost associated is higher. But certainly in some degraded forest soils, also some work that we've been doing here, we have seen some substantial benefits of incorporating biochar into the soil in reducing erosion and runoff. But most of the way we think about using biochar in soils is by incorporating biochar into the soil. Why? Because the roots grow into the soil, right? That's where biochar can give most benefits to the soil, by allowing the roots to access more water and nutrients, and also by making the soil softer so that the roots can grow more easily. Surface applications, where you just apply the biochar on the surface, are also studied, but much less than the biochar incorporation, in part because surface applications, the benefit, you're not really using biochar to its potential, of course, where the roots go into the soil, and also a bit because surface applications come with the risk of wind erosion, where the biochar is eroded by the wind, and especially the fine biochar particles can cause problems for inhalation of people. But in certain systems, surface applications of biochar are feasible, I think. Certainly in some forest systems, we've also done an experiment in the Moshika Mountains where we applied biochar combined with straw mulch. If you just apply biochar to the surface in a forest soil that is on sloping land, then it is likely that the biochar will erode very easily. But when we applied biochar mixed with straw, it reduced the erosion quite a lot to action. The results were quite surprising how much biochar was left in the soil after 2 years. Something like 90% was still there.
So we should apply biochar in the soil and then mix, right?
If you want to really get the strongest effect size of biochar, yeah, then it's really incorporating it into the soil. And then how deep do you want to incorporate your biochar is a question of how deep is your soil to begin with, right? Some soils are very shallow, particularly in the forest. Soils can be just 15 centimeters, so obviously you cannot apply it deeper than that. Depends on what crops are you growing, how deep do those crops like to root. The thing is, the deeper you apply it, the higher the cost. So that's a consideration for every individual farmer or landowner to work out.
How did your team do it in Quinta da França?
In Quinta da França, so the biodiverse pastures, they are disked, so the soil is mobilized about every 5 years, and then they're reseeded to keep them biodiverse. Every 5 years, there's an opportunity to incorporate the biochar. It can be done like that. Of course, the plots that we have in Quinta da França, it's a research project. It's not an agronomic project. We hope to do that next. The small plots in Quinta da França, to make sure that our results are robust, my colleagues in the field last year, they've mixed the soil with the biochar in a cement mixer to make sure that it's really a homogeneous mixture. If you would do it the way it would actually be done in practice, so if you would spread the biochar in the soil and then you disk it in, you get quite a heterogeneous concentration of biochar. So there will be a clump of biochar in the soil here and much less there, which is okay if you do it at a farm scale. But for research purposes, we needed to make sure that it was a homogeneous mixture.
How deep did the team go?
20 centimeters deep. Of course, the soil in Quinta da França is a relatively deep soil for Portugal. It goes about 70, 80 centimeters deep.
The application was in October of last year. How long does the experience last?
We hope to keep the field site going for as long as possible, because what happens in the long term is really still a question, right? Will effects start to go down? Will it be stable? Because biochar is relatively recent, right? Really in the last 15 years or so, the research has increased exponentially with biochar. There's a lot of knowledge now out there. But for the long term, the agronomic research stations that we have in Europe and in Portugal with biochar, to get to an idea of what happens in the longer term, well, we need these biochar sites that have now been established, but we need to keep them going. So we need to find the funding to keep these biochar sites going to know what happens in the long term. While at the same time, we have to be a bit more creative, right? So we do accelerated aging in the laboratory. So we mix soil with biochar, and then we try to speed up the aging process by increasing the wetting and drying cycles and the heating and cooling cycles to try to get an idea of what may happen in the longer term.
What is needed to make the application of biochar more common?
For biochar to be more common is also a question of the market. It's not just a question of the knowledge base that is built up by science. When I started working on biochar back in 2008, there were a lot of environmentalists and even scientists that were either really pushing for biochar because they were really passionate about mitigating climate change. And at the same time, there were a lot of environmentalists and scientists who were completely against biochar, that it would be the end of the world. It was very polemic in those days. But for sure, I recognized in those days that the knowledge base was not sufficient to actually start having biochar in the free market. But since 2008, the amount of knowledge that science has built up with biochar is really remarkable. It's something that hasn't been seen much before. We're talking about tens of thousands of publications on biochar globally, and many meta-analyses that then try to make sense of all these different experiments everywhere in the world to get a better idea of what is really going on. So we're starting to get a really solid grasp now on what the good combinations are of those soils with those biochar. But I think we have now come at a point where we can start with commercial biochar application in a controlled manner, right? So I think it is, we're at the point that we can start thinking about only allowing those biochars from those feedstocks that we have a lot of scientific knowledge, but not yet include those for which we don't have a consensus on what happens, right? So for example, the wood chip biochars, we have a lot of knowledge. I think there's a real consensus about how to pyrolyze those feedstocks and to come with safe biochars. We have biochar certification. That's great. That's useful. We have different systems in Europe and the United States. Both are quite reasonable and they can be compatible. What we really need is effect-based certification, so that the end user, the farmer or the landowner, not only knows that the biochar doesn't have any pollutants, but he also knows, if I apply this biochar in this soil that I have, I can apply up to this percentage to that depth for the crop that I'm growing, and it will work. If they don't have this knowledge, there's a real risk that farmers will apply, like you said before, too much biochar, which is not good for the environment, not good for the farmer, and it is also not good for the biochar industry, right? Because he's going to get no effects, or he's going to get negative effects. He's going to talk to his neighbors, they're going to see that, they're not going to like it. So I think what is really missing now is for the biochar industry to step up to help with this effect-based certification. In other sectors, what has worked really well is a partnership between industry, government, and academia to make this work in a more directional way, more efficient manner. And then we get to a system where the information is freely available. I can take this biochar that costs so much, and I can apply it that way to have an effect of X percent on increasing the water availability, or Y percent on the nutrient availability. Or I can take that other biochar that is made from a nutrient feedstock, like a manure, then I can apply less and still get the same effects. That is really the information that the end user needs to have. And at the moment, that is not so freely available.
Obrigado por ter ficado desse lado. Para conhecer mais sobre as diferentes maneiras de valorizar os subprodutos agrícolas, veja o mais recente episódio do Biosfera na RTP Play. Até ao próximo programa, seja biopositivo.
Na próxima semana teremos novo podcast. Siga-nos no Instagram e acompanhe as novas reportagens do Biosfera no Facebook.